Well met, and welcome to episode 123 of the Bill Shakespeare Project podcast for March the 6th, 2016. For our blog and previous podcast episodes, check us out at thebillshakespeareproject.com. Greetings. This is Bill Walthall, and in this podcast, we take a break from our usual discussion of plays for a special interview. Last year, I learned of an upcoming web series, Titus Andronicus, a comedic take on the buddy private eye trope, with characters named, well, Titus Andronicus. Back then, I mentioned the teaser trailer and said how I thought this was a pretty funny concept. Well, over the course of the last couple of weeks, I was contacted by the folks behind the series and learned that the first season had been released. I checked it out, and boy, is it good. I was itching to do another interview for this podcast, and this series was so good I figured, what the heck, let's see if they'd be willing to carve me out some time to chat. Well, lucky me, Seamus Sullivan, one of the writers and producers, was willing. And here's our conversation. Sorry in advance for any sound issues.
All right, today we've got Seamus Sullivan, one of the producers of the new web series Titus Andronicus. It's a loving but comic look at Shakespeare from a perspective of kind of a classic noir detective series with kind of a good cop and softer but not quite too soft bad cop. Seamus, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Okay, so why don't you give us a little overview of what Titus Andronicus is, and then we'll give the folks a sample.
Absolutely. So the idea for this emerged when my co-writers and co-producers, Megan Kelly and Madhuri Shaker, and I, we were all doing a show for Hollywood Fringe back in summer of 2014. And it was a show called Much Ado About Something. It was a Fringe production of Much Ado, where the messenger was single-handedly fighting off an alien invasion in the background because all the main characters were too self-absorbed to realize what was going on. And we wanted to do something else after that. And one of the jokes that had come up during that production was this joke about Megan misunderstanding the title of Titus Andronicus as being two names. And we joked about how you could do a great buddy cop show set in the world of Shakespeare with that. And then we kept talking about it. And then the conversation turned into, why don't we actually do that? And we were all also really interested in doing a web series, which was new territory for us because the three of us are mainly playwrights and none of us had ever produced our own web series before. So that's what this sort of grew into. It grew into this story about wanting to do the stories of Shakespeare in a modern setting through the eyes of these two original characters who are two detectives who are going to be investigating the murders that happen in Shakespeare, as often happens.
That is incredible. Okay, so you said that the first bit was through a piece that you did for the Hollywood Fringe Festival. So I take it the three of you at that point were all in Los Angeles.
That's right. Yeah, we all live in and work in Los Angeles as of right now, although Audrey and I are getting ready to move east.
Okay, so I guess my question is, how much of kind of Los Angeles film noir history with, you know, Raymond Chandler, that sort of thing, influenced your take on Titus Andronicus?
So for me, that was a huge part of what went into telling the story and a huge part of what made me excited about working on it. And of the three of us, I am probably the biggest fan of detective fiction, particularly Raymond Chandler. So it was very, the three of us wrote these together. I broke a lot of the basic story for Hamlet, and then we went over the scripts for the three episodes that we shot together. So the dialogue is from all of us. And a lot of those noir tropes came from us talking together about how to apply those to Hamlet. So that's why we get Ophelia in the beginning, hiring them. That's sort of where we get the parlor scene at the end, where we sort of explore a new interpretation of how things might really have gone down in Hamlet other than the popular version that sort of we the public have heard. But a lot of the verbal and the visual style owes a lot of debt to classic detective fiction. So a lot of that's Chandler, our director, Liz Rizzo, and like all of us as writers are also big Veronica Mars fans. So that was sort of a more modern example of the kind of story we wanted to have fun telling. And, you know, and the scenery and the locales of Los Angeles, because this is where we were shooting, really became a big part of the story. Liz talked about the idea of bright noir as a style that she wanted to bring to this. And I think that really made it into the finished product in a great way.
Absolutely. That's awesome. You know, you mentioned the opening episode with Ophelia. So why don't we play a little bit of that opening and give the people a taste of what they'd be seeing?
Great.
I catch him talking to himself. He's walking backwards out of rooms. He sees things that aren't there. He told me to go to a nunnery, which I assume is a place for nuns. He's always been weird, but, like, artistic. Weird. This is different. I guess it could be because his dad died. Whatever he's hiding, it could ruin the family. I need someone who can solve this with discretion.
I just want to say that that opening monologue is just dead on hilarious. From her tone, especially when she talks about the nunnery aspect of it, just gives you this great kind of Southern California vibe. Now, as we were kind of going into that clip, you mentioned some of the noir influences. I just want to say that as I was watching that first episode and the Titus character took out a flask and started to pour her own drink, I just got this wonderful kind of Nick and Nora vibe, this, you know, thin man vibe of, you know, kind of a little bit of drinking, a little bit of sleuthing, but just more or less having fun with the whole aspect of it. Really well done. So what made you decide on Hamlet being the first series?
We talked a lot about what we wanted to lead with because we actually plotted out the equivalent of three web series worth of story. We only wound up shooting the Hamlet story, but we also drafted three episodes that would take on Macbeth, and we plotted out and drafted much of three episodes that would make up Romeo and Juliet. And we went with Hamlet for a few reasons. I think we were all really happy with where the story was. I think there was the right balance between surprises and Shakespeare references and a good way of introducing the characters and just a lot of jokes. We were just really happy with the combination of comedy and suspense that we were able to get from the ideas we all came up with for Hamlet. And I think as far as when you're thinking of doing a web series rather than writing a play, I think first impressions are so important. You know, even down to that first shot that you were talking about. We talked so much, the writer, you know, us the writers and Liz the director, about, you know, what it was going to look like, what she was going to be saying. I called it the Godfather shot a lot because we really wanted that first moment to already tell you so much about the world and the situation. And I think ultimately we went with Hamlet because I think it is one of the most noir of Shakespeare's stories. There is so much suspense and guilt and, you know, stewing in the fantasies of revenge and, you know, and someone contemplating, you know, going outside the law because he can't get justice within the law. And I think that's all very noir.
Absolutely.
And it's also the most recognizable Shakespeare story. And we really wanted something that said to people as quickly as possible, like, this is the world we're in. You know, it's Shakespeare, but it's today, and it's playing out a little differently than you might be used to.
I love it. That's awesome. And what I especially liked, not only from that first episode, but also from the teaser trailer that you guys put out last year, was their listing of the types of cases that they had gone after before, the, you know, mistaken identities, the lost twins, you know, all of that stuff was just dead on. It just, rarely do I watch a web series or even a trailer and it makes me laugh out loud. But when I heard them talking about the types of cases they went after, it was just like, oh my God, these people know their Shakespeare. They know what they're going after. It was great stuff.
Thank you. And that's very much something that's very much the kind of audience that we wanted to do this for. It was going to be people who, and you'll pardon me for saying this, would get the really nerdy Shakespeare stuff that we were embedding in there.
Mission accomplished. I got it. It was great. Now, here's my question. You said that you started doing this stuff in the, or rather the Fringe Festival was in the summer of 2014. And I know that your trailer came out in spring of last year. And for anybody who's actually looked at the trailer and then looked at the final series, you see that there's been a casting change.
That's right.
Had you gone into production before the casting change took place, or was that all of that kind of before you guys even started to roll cameras?
We were in pre-production, so the cameras hadn't started rolling yet when we did the recasting, but I think we were something like 2-3 weeks away. So it was coming up, and it's a really fun story now, actually. So we when we shot the initial trailer, we had cast Evan Smith as Titus and Corey Walter Johnson as Dronicus. And they're both, you know, tremendous comedic actors we love to work with. And Evan, who was originally playing Titus, actually does, you know, a lot of Shakespeare. Actually, they both do. Evan does Shakespeare with the Independent Shakespeare Company in particular. And Corey actually, in the fall, was in a production of Hamlet done by Four Clowns here in Los Angeles, which, just a quick shout out to them. It was not only one of the funniest versions of Hamlet I've ever seen, but it was also just one of the best, period. It was poignant. It was inventive. It was one of the best experiences I've had in a theater in the last few years. Both of those actors have a lot of Shakespeare cred. And where that actually became a problem was Evan got cast in Independent Shakespeare Company's production of Romeo and Juliet in Griffith Park. And the productions, like, lined up with a big chunk of shooting. So we wound up having to recast. And it worked out well. Like, it was all amicable. That wound up being, you know, one of the best Romeo and Juliets ever. But we needed a new actor. So we actually talked to my friend Zara Fuzzle, who wound up being Titus in the actual web series, who is a tremendous actor who I have known for years, since we both worked together in D.C. And we were initially going down kind of a list of names, like, you know, who can we get to do this, who's good enough, and we hit on Zara, and we were excited for that for a few reasons. First of all, Zara's great, obviously. She's also wonderful to work with off camera. And then just the whole idea of how that would change the character became something we were all really excited about. Titus has always been a character in my mind who grew up reading a lot of detective fiction, really loved film noir, and maybe wanted to live in that world. And I think to an extent, maybe lives in that world a little bit more than the real world. And so that was something that kind of colored my interpretation of the character. And then when we brought Dare into it, we didn't have to rewrite too much, but we did another pass on the scripts with that in mind. And that brought out a really fun stuff about what is it like to want to be a private detective, you know, and be a woman, and then run into, you know, all the challenges that you're going to face when you're in that role. And that suddenly made, I think, a lot of that character's frustration seem much closer to home and more resonant. I think it made Titus the character someone who suddenly, I think, like, the frustration suddenly seemed even more reasonable. I think the character, I think, became even a little bit more empathetic with Dronicus. Suddenly they were both empathetic characters, but in very different ways. Mm-hmm. So it was one of those really fun problems that turned into a great opportunity. And I think the web series is now really strong for it.
Yeah, I thought when I first saw that first episode, I hadn't known about the change in casting. So, you know, I got about a minute and a half into that first episode, and I went, whoa, wait, I got to pause this. Went back to the site, saw the discussion of the change in casting. And although I loved the trailer, the teaser, and the interplay between Titus and Dronicus there, it almost felt as if it was almost too on the nose of the buddy cop trope. Whereas with this new Titus, there was this, like you said, there was a different vibe to it. Both of them were a little bit more empathetic. And, you know, now that you mentioned that, you know, in your mind you saw Titus as maybe living too much in this noir world, you know, when she took out that flask and poured that drink, I was just going, oh, this is just awesome. Yeah, you could tell that she was very much in that world, because her first instinct is, oh, this is a murder. Absolutely. So that was great. Now, you said you were about 2 weeks out of production when you needed to make the casting change. Did that alter the length of production at all, and how did that production go off? Did it go off pretty flawlessly, or were there some fits and starts?
You know, it really went surprisingly smoothly. We were very lucky in that not only like was there a good choice for that, but the all-important schedule lined up. So we had one long weekend of shooting cordoned off in advance. We got our locations lined up, and it was basically one location a day. And, you know, we were basically in people's homes. Like a lot of the vlog segments at the end of all the episodes, those were all shot at one of our houses. So we were calling in favors. We were doing set dressing in all those environments. That cafe there in the beginning, that's someone's backyard. So, well, that was actually one of the hardest parts of production to get lined up. So getting them secured for that weekend was really the big hurdle. And then once we got there, we just ran with it. And we were very lucky in that, in addition to our director, we were able to put together a crew that just completely knew what they were doing, like much more than we did as playwrights. So our director photographer, Benjamin Dell, put together a crew and got, you know, all those beautiful shots set up very quickly and efficiently. Our production designer, Kate Prusser, made that beautiful cafe. You know, she set up all that business with the curtain in the second episode, which, you know, now acquires all this fun allusion to Hamlet. But at the time, it was just this production thing we needed so that we could be doing all the business with Claudius in the other room. You know, she made the funeral look beautiful. So production really went as surprisingly smoothly as it did, because we had such good people who were just ready to go and were able to get all that done in one long weekend. I've never seen anything like it.
That's great. So in other words, your first web series was a very good experience then.
It was. And we learned a ton from this, and there is a bunch of stuff that we'll just be better at next time because we've gone through this experience once. But for our first time out, personally, I think it came out beautifully, and I'm really proud of it. And I'm glad people seem to be enjoying it.
You should be proud. This is just a boatload of fun. I watched them all in one go. I think it was maybe last Tuesday morning. And when my wife got home, I said, come on, you got to check this out. You know, I know you got papers to grade, that sort of thing, but check this out. And she was just grinning through through that episode. It was just great to see. Now, you said that you're geared up for the next time. Are you going to be doing either that Macbeth or the Romeo and Juliet for the next one? And then what does that timeline look like? When will we see another Titus Andronicus?
That's a great question. So we've talked a lot about it. If we do come back and do another one, it's probably going to be Macbeth. We've got a lot of ideas for what that story is going to be. We've got a lot of new things, both in terms of style and characters, that we would be really excited to take on. A lot of it comes down to whether we'll be able to make another production happen. So I mentioned earlier, Madhuri and I are both moving to New York in like about a month. And so that's exciting because that's a great theater town. We're both pretty excited for some of the playwriting opportunities that we hope to find there. What that's going to do to, you know, our ability to organize a production and be there for a shoot, that's kind of up in the air right now. So we're excited to do more. And I hope we find we have the capacity going forward. Right now, it's kind of a suspenseful time for that.
It sounds like some great opportunities coming up. You had mentioned earlier that I think you said you were coming from D.C.?
That's right, yeah. I went to Georgetown where I got into theater, and then I stuck around D.C. doing theater there and working at Arena Stage by day for about 7 years before moving out here to Los Angeles.
Wow, that's great. Now, when you guys started to brainstorm ideas for this web series, the Hamlet series, Take me kind of through that process. Was it a matter of coming up with the structure, which is, you know, mainly these kind of set pieces, these three set pieces, or did you kind of map out kind of an overall flow and then pull from that the set pieces that would then become the basis of the series?
More the second one, I think. When we were back when it was still half a joke, when we were talking about what Titus Andronicus would be like, we started throwing out these ideas for what it would be fun to do with them. And one of the first ideas we had, and I was very excited about this one, was that second episode where, and this won't really give anything to Duet, Hamlet is getting ready to kill Claudius, and Hamlet is actually ready to go. Hamlet is very decisive and just wants to get it over with. And then the two detectives interrupt him and bring up all these questions and bring up these doubts and have this big agonizing discussion with him about whether he should do it. And Claudius just leaves during that whole discussion. We all thought that was a hoot. And that was one of the earliest things we wanted to do with it. And then later when we were all sitting down and actually planning how that story would work, that's when we came up with the idea that Ophelia would, of course, be the dame who initially approaches them, because that's usually how these stories start. And then the third episode, the actual solution to the case, was something we came up with very late in the game. We had written an initial draft of the script, and the first two episodes were pretty fun. And then the third one just sort of happened, and it wasn't quite clicking. And we had gotten together for a rewrite and were contemplating adding jokes. Because I think what happened in the initial rewrite is everyone just shows up at the funeral, and there's a fight, and Titus and Andronicus are thrown out. And then, that's the end. And then, things in Hamlet sort of proceed to conclude offstage in the way everyone remembers.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in a coffee shop, looking sadly at our coffees, when I came up with the idea for someone else is actually behind everything that happens in Hamlet. And that's what they're going to figure out. And then we got really excited, and I rewrote my draft, and then we all went over it together and came up with the twist there. So that actually was an 11th hour thing that I think helped it to really stick the landing. You can't have a good detective story without, you know, a good intriguing beginning and then an ending that is surprising, but, you know, actually does make sense when you think about it. And I hope ours does.
Absolutely. When I got to the end of it and I saw how you had resolved it, I sat there and going, you know, I may have to go back and read the play, because there's a sick and twisted aspect to that, that you could actually do a full Hamlet and kind of have this tension of the character who ends up being behind it all. I'm not going to spoil it, actually being behind it all. You know, it was just fun to watch. I was sitting there going, you know what, that's, not only is that smart, but that causes me to rethink the original, which is not something you often see in a spoof. You know, usually it's just like, okay, I get the joke because I've seen the original. Rarely do you get a spoof that is so smartly written and crafted that it makes you want to reappreciate the original. So, like I said, you guys have more than nailed the landing. I think you nailed the whole thing. It was very, very good.
Hey, that's gratifying to hear. And that's really a way we wanted to approach it, too. We wanted to tell a lot of jokes about Hamlet, but this was something that was very important to all of us. We didn't want the jokes to be at the expense of Hamlet the play. We wanted them to be, like, you know, jokes and funny situations that would come up if these were real characters living in this admittedly very silly, very heightened world. But, you know, none of us really thought it would work if it wasn't dead serious to the characters
mm-hmm.
who were involved in that, if the stakes didn't feel very high to them. So that's how we tried to treat it, like reverently but also irreverently.
Yeah, very good. I know that you know, you were saying that you see Hamlet as one of the more noir of Shakespeare's pieces. For me, it's always been Macbeth. So, you know, to know that Macbeth may be the next one is just, you know, I'm already kind of just rubbing my hands together in giddy anticipation, going, oh, what they could do with this one, you know. I cannot wait to see what a Lady Macbeth in the world of Titus Andronicus would be like. That would be awesome, to say the least.
And I do hope we get a crack at it. We've talked a lot about how we would handle the witches in particular, how we would frame the episodes, how we would go to a darker place with it without getting gratuitous. We've just talked a lot about season one of True Detective and how much fun it would be to do that particular style of over-the-top noir. So I do hope that's a story we get to tell.
The moment you said True Detective, I just kind of went, oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah, that would work.
Yeah. Yeah, it would work, right? It would fit.
That is awesome. You know, and you were mentioning during your retelling of what was going on with the casting, I had heard such great reviews about the Four Hamlets, but I never got a chance to see it. But I was able to catch the Romeo and Juliet last summer in Griffith Park, and very good. Very good.
It was tremendous. I think we all went to see it together because we wanted to support Evan and tell him afterwards what a great job he did in the show. But the whole production, like I don't know what your experience with the play has been, but I've never seen a production before where Romeo and Juliet didn't both seem kind of like idiot kids to me. Mm-hmm. But a lot of productions I've seen didn't really acknowledge that. They seemed to take a tone of, you know, oh, you should feel like this. And this production felt different. This felt like, yeah, these are idiot kids. This is what being young is like.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and you should love them, you know, because they're young and stupid. And this is a period of life that they're actually not going to make it out of. And that's a shame because, like, these are really sweet, confused, messed up kids. And it's just so funny and awkward and sad to watch them. And that's what being young was like. And it was so beautiful to see that done that way.
Absolutely. I taught high school English for 10 years, and by far Romeo and Juliet was my favorite play because I got to teach it to freshmen who are pretty much idiot kids.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, the way I was, you know, hooked into Shakespeare was I had this great freshman English teacher who made Shakespeare feel illicit. You know, it was the sex, it was the violence, and he was going to, he was going to let us in on a secret that nobody else knew, you know. But yeah, I remember seeing that production last summer, and we were at intermission, and my wife looked at me and said, so what do you think? And I go, well, I'm waiting for the cops to come in and arrest Mercutio. And she kind of looked at me and went, huh? And I go, because he has stolen the show. I mean, you know, his Queen Mab just... It was just incredible. You just kind of went there going, oh, my God, this is the way it should be. And, I thought that production was just excellent. It was one of the few times where I saw Juliet who actually felt like she hadn't quite reached 14 yet, and mm-hmm. yet she was still more mature than the Romeo. You know, it was just really well done.
The whole scene where they can't say goodbye to each other, like that's a boyfriend and girlfriend who won't get off the phone. You know, you hang up. Like it was great.
Well,
it worked so well.
You know, my wife and I went to high school together, and she was going, I remember sitting on the phone for 15 minutes straight with nobody talking, just waiting for the other person to get off the phone. And goes, yeah, luckily we didn't have to wait 15 minutes during this production, but yeah, we totally get that, you know. And so it was a lot of fun. Now,
it was beautiful that it was there, that, like, he didn't predict phones, but, like, that kind of conversation was there, and you just have to dust it off, and it makes sense today.
Absolutely. And that's what good productions of Shakespeare do. They dust it off. It's not a museum piece. It's not something so reverently done that, you know, it just smothers the play. And that's why I think things like what you've done with Hamlet here through Titus Andronicus make it fresh again. It opens it up for people to come and approach the play, not from a, God, I got to study this perspective, but rather, I want to experience this because there's something here that I hadn't seen before.
Exactly. If a play works, it's got to be about what's happening now in some capacity.
Mm-hmm.
It's just got to be.
Now, I know I've put links on the website. I'm going to put links on this podcast. But why don't you let everybody know where they can find Titus Andronicus?
Absolutely. So right now, all three episodes are up on www.titusandandronicus.com, and it'll be spelled Titus and Dronicus. So there'll be two D's in there rather than the one D you'd get if you were spelling it the Shakespearean way. We hope you watch and enjoy. And if you do enjoy, let people know. Share it, post it, get it out there however you like.
Absolutely, and I'm sure everybody will enjoy it because it is a wonderful piece of work. And I just want to congratulate you and everybody else who was involved, all the actors, all the other writers, the director. Just a job well done.
Thank you so much, Bill. And it's really a pleasure to. It's just great to talk to someone who got all the in jokes. That's really why we did it. We wanted someone else to laugh at all of our esoteric Shakespeare jokes. So thank you.
Well, absolutely. I loved it. And now that I'm subscribed to your YouTube channel, I will know when the next series will come. So I'm wishing you guys the best, and I'm hoping to see another series coming up soon.
Well, thank you so much. It's been really a pleasure talking to you about it.
Same here. Thank you very much.
All right. Take care.
Okay.
Now, I just want to thank again Seamus Sullivan for putting aside some time for what I thought was a pretty good little discourse on the making of and influences on what I urge you all to check out, Season 1 of Titus and Dronicus. On the blog post for this podcast, you'll find links to the Titus site and their YouTube channel. So check it out. You will not be sorry. Now, if you've enjoyed this podcast, but you haven't been following along with our daily blog entries, try it out. Maybe you'll like it. So, if you'd like more in-depth discussions about plays or just want a daily fix, check out the blog entries at thebillshakespeareproject.com or become a fan of our Facebook page and our Twitter feed. But remember that those social media outlets are more for Shakespeare news and notes than for discussions of our current play under study, which for the next 3 months will be King Lear. Also, if you have any question or comment about this or any other Bill Shakespeare Project podcast or blog entry, you can always lob me an email at bill@thebillshakespeareproject.com. Join us again for our next podcast, when we'll ease our way into Lear with some introductory words and a plot synopsis. I hope to see you then. You've been listening to the Bill Shakespeare Project podcast for March the 6th, 2016. For our blog and previous podcast episodes, check us out at thebillshakespeareproject.com. And we shall see thee anon.